Hello, I'm James, and I am an alcoholic. My sobriety date is November 13th, 2005, so I just picked up 3 years a couple weeks ago, which for a guy like me is absolutely amazing. I'm in a state of shock when I pick up that chip, just how different my life has gotten. And I didn't think it would. I was so hopeless. I had just given up on everything, and I didn't even think AA would work. You know, I really didn't, but I tried it anyway, and I've gotten the results. Let's see, I have a sponsor. I spoke with him this afternoon. He told me to tell the truth. He's, you know, I was talking to him about something, and he's always like, you know, don't worry about it. It's no big deal. And anyway, I'm very fortunate. My home group is the Common Solution Group in Charlottesville, and that is the most important thing in my life, is my home group. I've got a host of friends. We're active. We're enthusiastic. We've got people greeting people at the door, and we make sure that nobody, you know, leaves there not feeling welcomed. And we stay consistent on topic. You know, it's a solution-oriented meeting. And the way our format, the way we do it, is we'll call people to come up to speak that we know have at least worked a fifth step and that are active in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, so therefore we know we are getting people that are on a solution, and that when a newcomer comes, they see the way out. It's not just, you know, my cat died, or you know, guess what my problem is, and what my therapist told me to do. It's not that, which is nice. But anyway, my home group, we meet at 7:30 on Thursday nights. If you ever want to attend, you know, get up with me, or you know, it's in the meeting list for a Jefferson area. I'm going to talk in a general way what it was like, what happened to me, and what I'm like now. And it hasn't been a bed of roses, and you know, I'm just going to try to be as clear as I can be about what happened to me and what's going on now. But I'll say, from my very first memory, even when I was a young person, I was restless, irritable, and discontent. I always felt awkward. I was always uncomfortable with myself, and I was always comparing myself to other kids, and I never measured up. You know, people's, they had, their parents had money, they had nice clothes on, they were athletic, they were good looking. And in my mind, I was always, you know, an ugly, shy kid, that my parents didn't have much money, and they were always fighting. And I was like, you know, there's something wrong with me, you know, I don't fit in with everybody. So at an early age, to get out of that, I just lied. I would lie. I'd come up with this imaginative life I had, and I would lie to try to impress other kids or make people think I was something I wasn't. And that gave me a little bit of relief, you know, got me out of my life. And as I got older, you know, that didn't go away. You know, I was just very insecure, always locked up in my head. And the first time I drank alcohol, I was 13 years old. And I'll never forget what alcohol did for me. It lit me up. It made all that insecurity, that scared, shy kid, it made all that stuff just disappear. You know, I was okay with who I was. I was funny. I thought everything I said made sense. And life seemed to be bearable. You know, and that night I got deathly ill. I puked about a half an inch on the bathroom floor. I woke up the next morning with a pair of tighty whities and just sick as a dog, face plastered on the floor. And I figured, I was like, you know what? As bad as I feel right now, it's a small price to pay for what that did for me last night. People were explaining to me what happened, and I'm sitting there trying to stomach down a Mountain Dew. And I'm like, my God, I was like, you know, that's wild. You know, that felt pretty good. And I didn't turn into an everyday drinker at age 13. I remember, though, you know, very early on that anything I planned on the weekends was associated around alcohol. You know, the friends I made was associated around alcohol. We'd go to, you know, spend the night at, you know, Garrick's house or Rob's house, and every time we'd go there, you know, we'd be right in the liquor cabinet, and we'd put about seven or eight different liquors in a stadium cup and chug it, and that's what I liked, and, I liked the effect. And during the week, you know, I'm going to school, and I'm still the same James. You know, without alcohol in me, I'm restless, irritable, discontent. I'm constantly comparing myself to other kids. I never measure up, and I can't understand what's wrong with me. At an early age, I'm thinking about killing myself at age 14 or 15. I remember trying to make pacts with the devil. I was like, devil, I'll give myself to you if you just make me all right, if you just make me cool, or you just make me fit in with everybody else. I'll do anything. You know, I just don't want to be me. I'm just anything but me. You know, God bless my parents. I blame them for a long time about, you know, if they would have been different to me, I wouldn't have drank so much. But I know now that they were doing the best they could. And, you know, granted, you know, I remember when my dad would come home in the evenings and my mom would be like, you got to go meet your father. Go meet your father. And by the time I got to the door, I knew if my dad was going to explode or not. You know, I could smell the alcohol on his breath. And I remember, you know, because I was always scared to death of him, but I remember when I'd go up to him, I was like, this is going to be a long night, or I said, "This, he's going to be all right tonight." And I remember his behavior, you know, and I'm just on a sidetrack here, but I remember his behavior at the dinner table, where one second he'd be the nicest guy in the world, you know, laughing, joking, this, that, and the other thing, and then on the drop of a hat, there would be a plate going across the table. The phone would go through the window, or something would happen, would just make him explode. And the kids would run everywhere, and, you know, I'd run upstairs and go hide up underneath the bed, and my mom and him would fight like crazy. And I remember thinking to myself, you know, God, I never want to be like that. Never want to be like that. Well, you know, I wasn't like that. I became worse than my father. And I passed that up, But alcohol early on for me was definitely a factor in my life. And I got my driver's license when I was 16 years old, and I wrecked my first vehicle 2 weeks later. And I have wrecked or totaled every single vehicle I've ever owned in my life because of alcohol. And that's, you know, that's nuts, you know, but that's just the way I drink. Even at an early age, I stood out with people that drank heavy. You know, my friends would, you know, people would be drinking beer, but I was always the guy that was going just a little bit too far. I was the guy throwing up all over somebody's car or getting drunk and just doing something just totally obnoxious, getting in trouble, getting suspended from school, and, you know, just making a complete mess out of my life. And I'm not one of these people that can drink and get good grades and function in life. You know, when I drink, I don't do anything else. You know, my life becomes a total wreck. And I finished 322 out of 327 students in my senior class. So if only five people did less than I did, and I had all this potential. You know, I had all the potential on the report card and all that, but my parents saw that I was headed nowhere, and they were like, you know what, we're going to send you to a year of postgraduate studies at a military school to try to get your grades up, and, you know, we'll send you off, and we'll see what happens there. Well, in that environment, I excelled. I wasn't around alcohol. They told me when to wake up, when to sleep, and when to study. And in a structured environment like that, in an institutional-type setting, I do all right because I don't have that freedom. But I still have an alcoholic mind. You know, I'm doing all this stuff, and, yeah, it's all right for the meantime, and, yeah, it's fitting the bill. But my head, you know, I'm still no good. If you knew who I was, you wouldn't like me. I've got these bizarre thoughts in my head. I hate myself. And if you know the things that I've done up until this point in my life, you wouldn't want to be my friend. And I'm thinking about killing myself almost every other night, and I can't stand who I am. And as soon as I get that little bit of freedom, I'm drunk again. And at this point, I'm doing other stuff that enhances my drinking, that that makes me try to feel all right inside, but still alcohol is what I'm always going to. And that's what when I start, I can't stop. And that was even at a young age. So my grades come up in this military school, and I get accepted to a few universities. And I'm looking at the list, and it's just like Radford, a couple other, you know, regular schools, and then there's a military college. And I'm like, well, I'm going to go to the military college because this seems to be working all right. You know, and I had visited some of my friends at Radford and places like that, and I saw how they lived. And I'm like, there's no way I can keep that bleed together. You know, the way I drink, I knew there was something wrong. I just didn't really know to the extent of what it was. But I said, there's a problem. I was like, well, if I go to a military school, it'll be all right. So I enroll in the military college, and I go there. And through the first, I don't know how long it is. It's like 2 or 3 months, you're a rat. That's what they call you. And you have no privileges. I mean, you wake up, you got people screaming at you from the time you wake up to the time you go to bed. And you're studying, you're exercising, you're eating, and you're in this fellowship of this tight-knit group. And in that environment, I did all right with that, too. And I remember the very first time I got any sort of freedom out of that structured environment, the first thing I went for was a bottle of alcohol. And I got this upperclassman that's kind of, I don't know if they call it sponsor or not. I think it's called a dyke. But anyway, the dyke would get you, he was kind of like your mentor. He was looking out after you, and you had to, like, get his laundry and stuff like that. But I was like, hey, can you get me a bottle of liquor? He's like, yeah, I'll get you a bottle of liquor. You can, you know, have some fun with your friends and all that. Well, I got that bottle, and I drank it in 45 minutes. And I just get it in my body, and I just got to have another one. I got to have another one. I don't know when to stop. And I got just rip-roaring drunk, and I remember people just were looking at me and like, oh, my God. You know, this is the James that we've been to school with for 2 months now. It was just a Jekyll and Hyde, like the book talks about, just a totally different person. You know, I urinated on my best friend's bed. I passed out, hit the deck, and the next day I woke up and I had to give him my bed, and, you know, and I'm sleeping on this bed now that was pissed on, and I was just a wreck, and you know, I'm trying to keep my drinking glued together. I'm just trying to keep it glued together, and you know, the first couple years I'm doing all right. You know, I maintain a GPA that's 2.7. I've got to work real hard to get C pluses. It doesn't come easy to me, but that's all right. You know, I was I couldn't pay attention at all. You know, I'm sitting in class and I'm thinking about myself. I'm thinking about what it would take to make me happy. You know, if I just had this, I'm just in a fantasy land in my head. And it always gets back to the point where I'm going to kill myself. Life's no good. And the weekends I'm drinking like a fish. I'm drinking like a fish, and my life's heading downhill. I'm progressively getting worse. The things I'm engaging in and the behavior I'm doing, it's not what I grew up to be. It's not what I was taught to do. Let me put it that way. And one weekend I went home. It was a sophomore or a junior, and you know, I just went on a drunk that, you know, I was just horrible. You know, some of the things I did on that episode was just so damaging to me that when I woke up the next morning, I had that fear, that just sheer horror, and that sheer hopelessness that our book talks about. I was terrified of who I was and what I had become, and now is when like my drinking really turned. Now where drinking wasn't something that I did to escape. Drinking was something I did just to function. I needed it now. Plus, without that, look out. You know, I can't stand who I am for 5 seconds. And my grades went from a 2.7, 0.0, academic probation, out. So I leave school. I get back to Charlottesville, Virginia, and I have this grand idea that I'm going to get this job on this farm and grow reefer and earn a living. And, I mean, that made perfect sense to me. That's what I was going to do. And my parents were brokenhearted. I mean, now that I look back on it, I must have really crushed them because there was their son that, you know, they had watched grow up and all the stuff I put my mom through. And I finally, they thought, had turned around. And now I'm, you know, dropping out of college and I'm working on this farm. In my life there, you know, I really started getting with the program with drinking. You know, it got bad, and I did it for 10 years. And from that, and that job was horrible. I mean, it was a good job. I mean, I was horrible, but it was just very conducive to like an alcoholic. You know, I lived where I worked. Nobody really gave me much slack about not showing up or showing up late. And I would go to work, I would get off, I'd come home, get drunk, wake up, just walk right out of the door and go to work and get drunk. And by this point, I'm doing other stuff that keeps me up, you know, for 2 days at a time so I can drink a whole lot more. And the people that I'm running with are, you know, just not nice people. Billy, I have no idea what time it is. I don't have a watch. Could you loan me yours? Thank you. Thank you, sir. So I'm working on this farm. I'm 21, 22 years old, and my alcoholism's full bore. I get into trouble. I had an assault on a police officer, and went to jail for a few days for that, and then got let out on good behavior. And it wasn't about 6 months later, I was in a blackout in a bar. And had been cut off, and I had thrown a glass at the bartender. And I had gotten, I violated my good behavior, and I was on, I'd gotten an assault charge for that. So I was getting ready to go to jail for 6 months. And for a guy like me, that was a wake-up call. I did not want to go to jail. It's not fun and games anymore. So I'm like, well, I got to do something. So I was like, I'm gonna go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And my very first AA meeting was at a place in Charlottesville. It was a Charter Hospital. It was a behavioral center. And I remember going there, and I don't remember anybody welcoming me. I don't remember getting a big book with phone numbers in it. I don't remember any of that. All I remember was that I went in there, I sat in the way back, I was a punk. I knew everything. You could not tell me anything. I saw a bunch of people sitting around in a room that looked old to me, that looked like they weren't having much fun. And I was like, God, this is terrible. You know, my life might be bad, but this is bad too. And so I went right back out and kept on drinking. And then I came back in. I mean, it's kind of unclear. I can't usually remember like the sequences of events, but I remember that I got a sponsor early on. Plus, everybody was like, "You've got to get a sponsor." So I've got this guy, and you know, he was sober. He was old. He had some money, and that's what I wanted. I wanted money, and remember, I would just call. I'd complain to him. I'm going to AA meetings. I'm showing up at least 5 to 10 minutes late. I'm leaving 10 minutes early, and what'll usually happen is they'll be like, they're reading like how it works, and they'll be like, "Does anybody have a topic?" And I'm throwing my hand up, and I'm saying, "F this, F that, blah blah blah, F F F." And as soon as I get done sharing, I'll get up and leave, or I'll get up and go get coffee and walk around like a lunatic. And that's how I was when I was a newcomer, and I was a horrible newcomer, and I owe AA a great deal of amends now. I just need, sponsorship has gotten me clear on that, about how I treat Alcoholics Anonymous. And that I, you know, I dress appropriate. I show up on time. I reach out. And I treat Alcoholics Anonymous like I'm a guest in somebody's church, because I am. And, you know, if there's people walking by, like the preacher or an old lady, and I'm sitting there dropping the F-bomb every 10 seconds, then she might say, "Hey, get that riffraff out of here. You know, I don't want my granddaughter hearing that mess. You know what that guy said?" And that's how I treated Alcoholics Anonymous. So I went to jail and did my time in jail. It was, you know, 60 or 90 days, I forget however long it was, and I got out and was still going to AA meetings. I think I was smoking pot after the meeting in the car by now, and not calling my sponsor. I think I started drinking again, and you know, it just started a vicious cycle for me from about the time I'm 24 till I'm 31 of going in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if any of you ever have done that, you know what it's a horrible place. I mean, you might think you've got a break every once in a while, but it always ends in the same thing, just utter horror and hopelessness. And I'm trying everything I can think of to try to control and enjoy my drinking. I'm taking every medication that they've ever made. I'm going to see this doctor, then they can't help me. Well, I go see this doctor, they can't help me. I'm a AA drifter. You know, I go to this meeting for a month, and then I go to this meeting for a month, and inconsistent at best. I'm not doing anything, not taking any suggestions, just a drunk, just an alcoholic that's not willing to do what AA offers. And you know, a lot of that stuff now is useful to me. I wouldn't suggest that. I know a lot of people that come here that do not relapse like that, but some people do, and I did. And it took every single drink it took to get me to the point that I was ready to take somebody else's direction. And for me, my last drink came, and it was funny. You know, I'm a guy that's been to jail, that's got his head split wide open, that's laid on the floor, ODing on something, with a telephone in my hand with 911 pressed on there. I'm like, I do not want to call because I know if I can get to my feet, I got beer in the refrigerator, and I'll be all right. I'm a guy like that. I've wrecked every vehicle I've owned. I've almost killed my sister. I've had somebody try to kill themselves in my house. I've been in psychiatric units. I've been, you know, all this stuff. And my last drink was uneventful as they come. I mean, it wasn't even in the top 1,000. I remember I was at a bar, and that was weird because by this point I wasn't a bar drinker. I was a guy that drank by himself with the window shut, with enough stuff to keep me up for the weekend, and had the phone off the hook like a lunatic. And so I wasn't a barroom drinker in the end. And I went with a friend of mine to a bar, and I was like, all right, I'm just going to have one drink. And I ran up a $70 bar tab in about 20, 30 minutes. And I remember that last drink, and I mean, my head's clear as a bell. I mean, my head's clear as a bell, and I asked the bartender what's the strongest drink he had, and he said it was a mind eraser. And I'd never drinking a mind eraser. You know, I was a straight liquor guy, and I was like, give me one of those, and I got it, and I just chugged it. And I felt nothing. You know, I didn't feel like the relief that alcohol had given me just a split second. And I knew that was going to be my last drink, as crazy as that sounds. And the next morning I woke up and did not go to work. And I remember, I'll never forget the way I felt inside. You know, I just felt like I could not go another 2 seconds, either drunk or sober, that my life was so bad that I couldn't take it anymore. I would have shot myself. I just did not have the courage. And I was worried what other people would think about me if I shot myself. I was that self-centered. And I did something. I called up a guy that had sponsored me while I had been going in and out for a long time. And I said, I need help. You know, what do you want me to do? And he said, I want you to, you need to go check yourself into a hospital. And that's something that I fought tooth and nail. I was like, they are a bunch of vultures that make money off of human misery. I'm like, I'm not giving them 1 cent of my money. I'd rather die. Give them money. That's just my mind. And my AA is free. But I mean, what was the point? AA is free and AA does work, but I needed a break from my environment. I had a whole lot of stuff in me, and my mind was so clouded, and it seemed to stick for me. So I went to this hospital, treatment center. And the whole time I'm in there, you know, I start back with the exercising, because that's always like one of my first things to do when I stop drinking is the exercise regimen to get me out of my head for a little while. And I'm doing that, and I have a sponsor that's in a structured group of Alcoholics Anonymous that has told me to call him every day. And I'm calling him every day from the treatment center, and I'm letting him know what's going on with me. And while I'm in that treatment center, I'm sitting there and I'm looking at everybody, and we have our little group meetings. You know, they pile everybody up. And what was really beneficial to me is I saw everybody and heard everybody talking about their little plans of what they're going to do when they get out of that place. And that had been me so many times. Like, this guy was like, well, if my girlfriend, I'm not going to see her anymore. And, you know, I'm going to get to work. I'm going to work hard. And, you know, I'm going to be all right. And this other guy, you know, he had an idea where he was going to move to Florida to some house or something, and he was going to be all right. And, you know, not me. I didn't have any plans. I had no ideas in my head whatsoever. My only idea was to call my sponsor and ask exactly what I needed to do to get out from where I was at. And that seemed to strike a chord with me. And as soon as I got out of that place, you know, I just dove headfirst into Alcoholics Anonymous, like my life depended on it. I continued to call my sponsor every day, like we had discussed, and because that was the plan. And that was also another thing different for me, because I had had four sponsors up until this point in my life. And the four sponsors I had, they were like, you know, well, just, they didn't really set any kind of guidelines for me. It wasn't really any like, well, we're going to meet on this day and do this or this and that. It was just kind of winging it. And I don't need winging it, because, I mean, I'm nuts. I'll start coming up with ideas in my head, and I'll believe it. I'll think I'm doing the right thing. And my sponsor would say, all right, we're gonna get together on this day and do this. And if you want me to sponsor you, you're going to have to make at least four committed meetings. You're going to have to get a job in a home group. And you're going to have to get to meetings early, and you're going to have to call me every day. And I'm like, well, what? And I don't tell him this, but I'm like, what does that have to do with anything? You know, what? That's not it. But I didn't argue with him. I was so sick and so hopeless. I was like, I'll do it. And I did it, and I found out later why it was good for me. And I'm so glad I did do it. So I got a job making coffee at this meeting. I was here every Sunday night, an hour early, making coffee. And after a while, you know, it became something I was very proud of. And I wanted to make sure the coffee tasted good, that it was made, and that the chairs were set up. And I got ate up with it, too. Like, Mike would set up the chairs. And I didn't like the way Mike had the chair set up, because they'd be too close together. So as soon as he got done setting the chairs up, I'd come back and I'd move them. And, you know, I was nuts, but I was in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was meeting up with guys, and I was taking road trips down to meetings out of town. And that did more for me than I think the meetings did. I was in a van full of people that, you know, we were laughing. We were having fun, cutting up for an hour and a half before the meeting and an hour and a half after the meeting. And I'm looking at these guys, and they got a twinkle in their eye. They got nice clothes on. They got jobs. And they feel pretty good about themselves. And I'm like, that's what I want. You know, I want what they got. You know, and the more I got to know them and I heard about how they drank and what they did, I figured that if I do what they do, then I'll get what they get. And I'm very fortunate to have been around a very active group in AA. You know, good examples of people that were staying sober, that had good quality of life. And I still go to that meeting out of town today. You know, three years later, I meet up with a group of guys from my home group, and we all carpool down, about 10 of us, every Tuesday night. And you know, I love it. You know, and I'm where I'm going to be Tuesday night unless something crazy is happening. But I couldn't tell you the last time I missed it. And so I'm going down there. I'm getting to know these guys, and just looking back, you know, that first year of sobriety, I don't know how I made it. You know, just crazy. You know, the only thing I can think of is I was involved in structure, and I was involved in AA, and the rest kind of took care of itself. You know, I'm not that same person, thank God. You know, it wasn't quite as chaotic as that. And I got to started going to AA speaker events, you know, conferences where, you know, whole groups would go for the whole weekend, and I would hear a message of hope, and it was amazing to me. You know, I didn't know that world existed in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I had a very old idea of Alcoholics Anonymous that wasn't very happy. You know, I thought AA was the end of the line, a place where you came and it put you out to pasture. You know, you were going to come there, and it was going to be long, boring, and it was going to take a long time. And that's just what I thought AA was. And, you know, I was around people that were, you know, just enthusiastic, full of life, you know, getting job promotions, happy, you know, just doing triathlons, you know, just having a ball, laughing from the soul, you know, not this like phony fake laugh. They were just energetic, happy people. And that's what I wanted. And, you know, it's not rocket science. If you want to be sober and you want to be happy, get around sober, happy people and do what they do. And I still keep it that simple today because I'm not happy all the time. You know, so if I get around people, I don't get too far out of bounds before I snap back out of it. I've done the steps. I'm not a step expert, but I have worked them. I know for me, you know, there's not a living human being that does. I mean, I do not have any secrets. Somebody knows every single thing about me that I've ever done. And that's a true freedom. And the stuff on my fourth step that I swore I would never tell another human being, I probably have told at least two or three different people about that stuff, and now I laugh about it. I mean, it's not that big of a deal. You know, I know other people have done it, and it's not that bad. And, you know, what a freedom. What a freedom. But, I mean, that stuff absolutely ripped me up for years, and I never thought I'd get out of it. I've, you know, steps 6 and 7, you know, I've realized today that my character defects are never going to go away. You know, they've diminished, and they're not nearly what they used to be, but I still have all of them to some extent or another. And a lot of that stuff is the most useful stuff that I have, because other alcoholics, when they see my imperfections or they see, you know, what's screwed up about me, they're like, yeah, I'm like that. You know, I know what he's talking about. So I'll call James and let James know what I'm thinking, because I know he's not perfect. You know, I know he's been like this, and he can tell me how he got out of it. And that's been one of the most useful things I have, because I'm not perfect. You know, I have an alcoholic mind, and I'm a human being. So, you know, that figure that, you know, I'm all over the place. Steps 8 and 9, you know, that was the real turning point for me. I know a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, when I came here, step 4 was like a big deal. Like, oh, God, you got to do a 4-step where you're going to get drunk. And, you know, yeah, that's true. But, you know, I had done 3 or 4 4-steps and gotten drunk within days after them, probably the night after some of them. You know, I mean, that didn't bind me. What, for me, the freedom started to come for me is when I made the list and then I became willing to make amends. And that's when I started to turn a corner in Alcoholics Anonymous and be able to look people in the eye and not feel so ashamed about myself. And I did not do this perfect either. You know, like everything in my life, I'm very strong out of the gate, but I fade off quickly. And as soon as I made my list, I'm looking at it, and I'm like, all right, let's go. And sponsorship's critical on 8 and 9, too, because without a sponsor, I'd have really made a mess out of this stuff. You know, I was writing down, you know, old girlfriends and stuff that I was going to go back without a sponsor and probably screw up my life even worse. And it was very comforting to be able to sit down with him and say, all right, we're not doing this, we're not doing that. this is what you're going to say for this. This is how you're going to go about that. And, you know, you're off. And so I do a couple of them, and then I stop making amends. I'm going to AA meetings, and I'm not making amends anymore. I'm hanging out, and my sponsor called me out on it. And I got a phone call one day, and he was like, I do not have the experience of staying sober like you're doing it. You know, if you want what I have, you got to do what I do. So I'm not going to be able to work with you. Well, I didn't want my old life back at this point. You know, my life had started to get better, and I was like, I'll do it. You know, I'm willing to do it. Yeah, it made me angry. It made me mad. But in the end, you know, I did it, and I'm so glad I did it. You know, because I do think for me, if I skimped on my amends, I'll eventually drink again, or I'll be so miserable in sobriety that it won't be fun here anymore. And this thing has actually become a lot of fun for me. And it's the highlight of my day is Alcoholics Anonymous. And 10, 11, I love step 10. That's my favorite step. I mean, for me, that's the utility step. I mean, you cannot have a brain in your head, and if you practice this step, you can do all right. And that's what I do. I'm on the phone with. I'm constantly full of, I mean, I can have fear crop up in my life at any given time. You know, at any given time, I can be afraid of anything. And if you throw something romance or finance related on top of me, look out. You know, I'm capable of anything. And what has happened as a result of being in an active home group is I have at least four or five people and a sponsor that are all tight-lipped that I call when I'm like this, and they know exactly what's going on with me. You know, I'm not a guy that walks around with, you know, 2 weeks of stuff bottled up in me anymore. I'm talking to alcoholics every single day. You know, there's one guy in my home group, I talk to him at least once, maybe twice a day, and I mean, there's nothing that he doesn't know about me. And, you know, my sponsor, I'm transparent with him, and when I get this stuff crop up in my life, I talk to another alcoholic about it and ask God at once to remove it. And, you know, I do all right with it. You know, it's a good design for living, you know. And today I do have a God of my understanding in my life. You know, that continues to change for me. I had a very old idea about God, like I did at Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, God was no fun. He did not like me. He was trying to kill me. He was mean. You know, just there was absolutely nothing positive describing my God of my understanding. And now it became very simple for me with my sponsor. He's like, well, what would you like God to be? I was like, how about loving? How about forgiving? Kind? Compassionate? Understanding? He's like, that makes sense to me. That's your conception of God. I'm like, is that simple? Yeah, can it be that simple for me? And he's like, yeah. And I mean, that was a huge turning point in my life, you know. And today I do not understand God at all. I mean, I know God, I'm not God, and my conception of God continues to change. You know, I know today for me that, you know, God's will is for me to be an Alcoholics Anonymous and trying to be useful to other alcoholics, to not be locked up in my house praying for hours on end and of no, you know, earthly good to anybody. My meditation is not long, and my, you know, and I'm willing to grow on all that stuff, and I have an open mind about prayer and all that. You know, if you've got peace in your life and you've got something that looks attractive to me, I'll ask you what you're doing, and I'll try it. And you know what? If it works, great. If not, so be it. I'm no worse off than I started. You know, I keep that open mind in Alcoholics Anonymous that I do not know everything, because I don't. I don't know anything. All I know is I've come here and I followed some suggestions and did it like my life depended on it, and I've gotten better. And I think I've become a useful member of my home group. And to me, that's the most important thing. What my life's like today, it is so different. It's unbelievable. You know, I used to not be able to stand myself, stand my own company, stand, you know, being by myself. And today, you know, I'm hardly ever by myself. You know, I'm either on the phone, I'm at work, I'm at an AA meeting, and if I do have any time to myself, 90% of the time, I'm all right with myself. I do not want to put a bullet in my head. I'm happy with who I am, and I'm enjoying myself. I don't have everything I've ever wanted on the outside, and believe me, my life has gotten better in every area. But, you know, what I've got on the inside today, I didn't think was possible. And that continues to change. Some days, it feels like I jump back 1,000 feet, and other days, it's like I could care less how I'm doing. I don't care how I'm doing. I care what I'm doing. And I'm still active in my home group. I've always got a job in my home group. Right now I'm the speaker seeker. I got the key. The key man is the most important man. Without the key man, you don't have a meeting. And I love that. I take pride in that. I take pride in my meeting. You know, I don't like go to other meetings and say what they should do. And I mean, I had that phase where I'd go to meetings in Alcoholics Anonymous and judge other people the way they did. And that's a joke, you know, an alcoholic judging another alcoholic, you know. But I know we've all done it, you know. But for me to judge anybody is just absolutely nuts. And you follow me around for a couple weeks, and you know, I'm a useful member of my home group. You know, I still do the same things I do now that I did very early on in sobriety. I get to meetings early, usually at least 20 minutes early. I greet somebody, I talk to somebody, and I try to be of use at that meeting, whether it be set up chairs, break something down, this, that, or the other thing. And I don't try to make it complicated. I still call my sponsor when he tells me to call him, and sometimes I'll call him even like just out of the blue, like today. I just added an extra phone call just to touch base with him. I'm still sponsorable. I won't argue with him or debate. You know, if he says do this, I do this. If he says, maybe you need to look at doing this a little bit differently, I definitely look at doing it differently. And I still get to points in my life where I do not know what I don't know what to do. You know, I've got a couple different options on what I can do, but I do not know which will be the best decision I can make, and I'm just can't do it. And I'll call my sponsor and say, this is what's going on. What should I do? I'll defer my decision-making over to another human being, and that's my sponsor. And I can do that with the utmost trust and confidence that whatever turns out, it's going to be all right, because another human being knows exactly what's going on, and I've made an informed decision with somebody that knows me inside and outside. Plus, when I get emotionally wrapped around something, I do not make good decisions. You know, even today, to watch a fellowship grow amongst you. You know, our home group started off; it was about 5 or 6 people. We didn't have meetings; it was like 3 of us. And now we had 50 people on Thursday night, and we've got people coming there, and they see something attractive. They see people that are happy, laughing, talking to one another. Message of hope and recovery, you know, not people like, I'm at the AA meeting again. I was here last week. You know, it's not that at all. You know, it's fun. You know, we have fried chicken dinners. We get together. We do stuff. We're taking road trips with other alcoholics. We're doing stuff, and that's, to me, that's fun. And I've got friends today that, you know, care about me, that actually want to know how I'm doing. I never had that before Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, the only people that I was around were people that I was trying to con or people that I drank with. And now today I've got an understanding and a love and compassion for other human beings that it's all AA. You know, I'm self-obsessed to the extreme. I don't care one rat cent about anybody. I just care about what's in it for me. Before AA, you know, and AA has changed that. I'm going to go ahead and close it. I think I'm getting ready to start rambling. I felt nauseous to my stomach. I ate a peanut butter sandwich, and it made me feel sick at some point today. But I think I did all right. I think I didn't pass out. But Alcoholics Anonymous has truly changed my life. I wouldn't. I'm not going to stop doing. I have no intentions on stopping doing what I'm doing today. And it's been, you know, a lot of people in this room have really, really helped me out. And the way you helped me out, you'll probably never know. And that's the thing. You don't know when you're helping somebody. For me, I got to show up because I don't know who I'm helping or how I'm helping them. Just as an example of who you are, how you act, how you reach out, and the type of example you are in Alcoholics Anonymous speaks volumes about who you are. And that's what I wanted, and that's what I still want. So thank you for asking me to speak up here, Billy. It's been an honor. Thank you.